Yo, this hot, this the spot, there it is, pod.com. We're interviewing the best comedians, so tune in quick and get your ears receiving them. We talking about life and life to stream right to you, from the microphone right to your home, dude. Side note, this might get embarrassing, but no, don't sweat, yo, cause there it is.
Welcome to the There It Is podcast, a comedy podcast to help you find your inspiration. I'm your host, Jason Farr. Let's do this. Thanks so much for joining us today for a very fun episode with comedian and actor Dave Merhej. And we have a really great chat about how he found his voice and how he got into acting and things like Rami and Sometimes I Think About Dying with Daisy Ridley, which is very cool. An awesome story. Why don't we just get right to it? Here's my chat with Dave Merhej.
It's great to see you again. I don't know if you remember this. We performed on a show together many years ago, like 9 or 10 years ago or something. The most racist show in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, yes. Yo.
Who else was on this show that I was in? Clayton English was on it. Was he on both for you?
I remember that. He might have been. No, he's on one. I was wearing blue pants.
It was
like a smaller theater than other. There's two theaters I played at.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bigger one and there was like a smaller, like, well, not a small, like small, but it was like, I remember it now.
Yeah.
Cause he brought, like, one time it was Dino Archie, Amir Kay, but that, I don't think it was that. We never performed on the same show there. This was with Clay and maybe Trix.
I don't know if Trix was there. Mia Jackson was on the show. God, there were a ton of people actually on that show. And there and the band was like a sort of reggae sort of jam band, and they wouldn't stop playing.
Yeah.
People walked to the, like we would walk to the mic and they didn't, it wasn't like on a talk show where they stop when the comic gets to their spot. They just kept playing. And so we're just standing there like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I remember that. Because there's a picture of us on stage. No, is that from the show, that show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a picture of all of us.
Yes, I remember that. I thought it was tied in with the school, the university there.
All I know is that it was a most racist show that I won a competition to open for.
Yeah, I remember now. It was tied into like a school maybe or something like that.
Yeah.
I do remember that because it was me, Jackson.
Yeah.
Maybe Daniel Tirado. No.
He was. Actually, he was the other person I was going to mention was Daniel.
It was
a fun time. It was a fun time.
Yeah, I do remember the band, and it was with, I think it was at their auditorium. It might have been at the university's auditorium or something like that.
Yeah, that was a great time, and it was like a fun moment for me because it was like my first time performing in front of that many people, I think. But it was like a cool moment because it was for a thing that I like got to do because I won a competition to do it. So it was like it was a fun night for me. You were great. You crushed in that.
Oh, thank you, man. I remember going there now 3 or 4 times, but every time I remember that, like Neil had moved out there.
Yeah.
He's originally from Toronto.
Right.
Yeah, he was doing that show originally. It started in Toronto and then it was in other cities in Canada. And then he moved out there. And I think I went out there like 3 or 4 times.
And you've had so much success since then. Congrats on it all.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
You've put out at least one special since then. Has it been two?
I mean, fully on my own, it's only been two, like in a sense that the one we did one in like 2016 called Good Friend Bad Grammar, but it didn't come out till 2018 because we were trying to shopping it around. And that one was like the first one we did. I mean, I didn't do it alone. I did it with my manager in Canada and the company he had, like a Macaw Studios. They had put the him in, and his name's Morgan, and he and the other guy's Millen. So that wasn't that, but that we shot that in Toronto. That was so 2018. And I think a little bit after that, they did Comedians of the World on Netflix. So they went around all over the world and picked 4 comics from each country. And I think maybe like I don't know, 5 months after we put that out, I think I got that. I did the Canada one. It was me, Deanne Smith, K. Trevor Wilson, I believe, and Ivan Decker were picked from Canada, and we shot that in Montreal, I think 2018 or 19 or 2018. But that was like a half hour.
Right.
And then, so I don't even, that wasn't like, you know, it was part of something. And then in 2022, I want to say, maybe, I shot a special called I Love You Habibi, but it was in Canada for Crave,
okay,
a streaming service, and it was with Just for Laughs. So that was, so it's like basically
and you also did Rami,
yeah,
the show for ran for three seasons.
Three seasons
and Rami just hosted SNL, and you also were in a movie with Daisy Ridley, Sometimes I Think About Dying, and you had a nice big role in that movie. So this is awesome what's been going on for you.
We shot that 2 years ago in Astoria, Oregon, and it came out the year later. I went to Sundance in like January, and then it came out this January as well.
Yeah.
So I like play like a co-lead to Daisy's character.
Yeah, that's so awesome that you've been still trucking along, because you know, sometimes you see somebody on a show, like years ago, I'd see somebody on something and I was like, oh, they're really talented, they should get stuff, but they don't always. And it's cool that you've been doing this stuff and getting it. Now, are you still based in Canada?
No, I left Canada in 2016. In a sense, I got my green card in 2016. So I think, it would have been after I performed with you at some, I got it in like, July. It was probably, I think it was in the weekend of Canada Day, but I was living in LA at the time. I got the full green card. So I've been living in the US since then. I'll go frequently back to Canada and still work there, obviously. But I mean, my residence is in Los Angeles.
Yeah. So that explains how you got Rami and, you know, how you had the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I met him 10 years ago at I was still in Canada. We were at the Arab Comedy Festival in New York.
Oh,
so we had kind of, kept in touch. And then when I moved or trying to move in 2015, I saw him down there. I think I'd stayed with him. And so I had already known him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, do you want to audition? And I was like, yeah. And and I think I was in China doing stand up. I was in Beijing. Yeah. And I sent like a self tape.
Mm-hmm.
That was like 2008. Teen around that time, I think the pilot shot, or 17.
Yeah, it was like so a 2019 to 2022 series.
Yeah, and I knew Mo already from stand up, Mo Ammer. I knew him from like shows with him in New York, and then the rest of the cast I had met when I started filming.
Oh, awesome. Okay, you know, had some background with Rami, who seems like a sweet guy. He seems like a nice, real nice
sweet,
guy.
Sweet, sweet guy. Yeah, I'd stay good. And I was chilling with him before, so I knew him.
And that was 10 years ago that you met him. And it was, I know you had some stuff out that I'd seen that was stuff that you put out in 2012, some stand up stuff that you'd put out then. But how long have you been doing stand up? I assume it's been longer than 12 years.
Way longer, yes. So I started in, I was like 19. I didn't really know how to, like, I thought you had to be 19 to do comedy, like to go to a bar. So I'd written like some stuff that wasn't funny, or I didn't know how to write comedy. Obviously, I just would write down my conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read a book called The Comedy Bible, and then just started to learn from other comics and get the structure of it. And then it was like, I was in college too. I went to a college called St. Clair College in my hometown, Windsor, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
On the border of Detroit, and my mom was just like, you can pursue your dream 100%, we support you, but can you just get an education for us or for you know, and I'm like, yourself too. And I'm like, I you know, I knew I was gonna do stand-up and acting, but I was like, I guess. And I'm glad I did it, actually. I'm really glad I did it. It taught me structure, and I met some great people, and it was such a fun time. Some stresses, obviously, and but during that time I wasn't really like doing stand up because my grades would drop. So my mom was like, just do it in the summer. But I also didn't understand that you have to go up every night.
Right.
And also I was in a city that didn't have that many rooms. And then I started to go to Detroit probably in my in around 24, 25. I'm 43 now, around that. It started to go like every day. And that's when it really started to like, I started to put in the work. So from whatever time frame, that age wise to now.
I got you. So like 20 some years if you go back to you when you were 19, but from like when you like feel like you really started grinding, at least 19 years. That's a stretch. Yeah.
100%. So that's why I felt like I fully was like, okay, I'm giving this the respect it deserves, as opposed to doing it once a week and then just assuming something can happen.
Right. So what were some of those early lessons that you learned when you really started grinding and started figuring out comedy?
I didn't have patience, to be honest with you. I thought it would happen in a certain manner. I didn't understand that it had to be like that. It takes nothing happens how you want it. And then learning like also like how to be myself on stage. I was just learning how to, like, I was like, I was taught by, or just, I remember a very funny comedian, Daryl Lennox, rest in peace. He was like, you can, anyone, not anyone could be funny, but he's like, it was like about finding like your funny, like how you are. Because I was going up there and I was getting laughs, but I was doing it in a way where I was like, I wasn't super connected at the end. At the end of the day, I wasn't really super connected. There were bits, which is fine, but I think he was like, I think, I mean, if you really want to go into it, I think you're just finding yourself. And then I just kind of was like, I took that kind of route, or
Oh,
that
interesting.
journey.
And so when he said connecting, did he mean like connecting with an audience or connecting material with who you are as a person?
I think it's like both, right? Because
Oh,
I was
okay.
doing jokes where it was like very like, I not that I didn't care for them, but it was like, I was very new. I didn't know. I was like, I came from a Middle Eastern background. I was doing like jokes that, yeah, just like they were on the surface level.
I get you.
And I don't know, and then because I always knew, I was like, oh no, I want to talk about stuff. So it was just like it took a while to like, be comfortable and just even start trying to do that journey and not
Yeah,
be
that is a
scared.
tough thing, 'cause like so many people can start out and then even in their comedy scene do well for themselves, but they're not being their themselves, they're not really dredging at all to really find anything real to say or anything that's true about them. And it's a tough thing to figure out, right? Like especially this, there are a lot of books now, but I mean, when you started, there weren't as many books and
No, it wasn't like
weren't any classes as like there are
no,
now.
there wasn't truly like sorry, there wasn't like any like there probably was more books in a sense, but not like how there is now. But I didn't know that. I was past that. The book, somebody had told me about that book too. I don't even think I discovered it on my own.
With books and with classes, they're teaching you structure, which is good, but I don't know how they could teach you how to find who you are as a comic. It's so personal.
Yeah, I learned the format of it, obviously, with those books. That's what I was learning. And then I learned how to find my style within it. But it was the format that was super helpful, and the structure, which I didn't even know. Like, do you know what I mean? I had no knowledge. I was just being funny around my friends or my family.
And then trying to like figure out how to do that intentionally on stage
Yeah.
is a whole different ball
Big time.
game. And one of the things that I noticed about you was like the stage presence. Your material was funny, but then also you were funny. Like there was something about like you could have been saying anything and I would have been laughing because you were there was something funny about your delivery system. So obviously, like there are two things that people have to figure out early on. It's, I guess, more than two things, but when it comes to who they are as a comic, they have to find their voice and then also figure out what delivery system works for them and is natural to them.
Yeah, well, that's what took so long to get, was to, because not like in a very like negative way about myself. I was like always found like always I was like, oh, my personality, it feels like my personality is funny to people. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and you know, more than the writing, it's not, and it's not like I don't think I could write. It was just more of like, oh, I think people are laughing just in life about how I say things. Because then I would be insecure about that sometimes. I'm like, I, why are you laughing? You laughing at me, kind of thing. So it took a while where I was like, oh, okay. And then that's where, but those were some of my favorite comedians, you know, like, I mean, Pryor's an amazing writer, but like I found his personality funny, and the way he said certain things that like were so funny that I was laughing at, and you know, and I always wanted to be like him, so I was, it was, yeah.
You mentioned people were, would be kind of laughing at just some how you said something, and you would get insecure about it. When you were doing comedy and started realizing, oh, I can utilize that, was there a hump to get over with that insecurity? Like how, and if so, how'd you get past that?
No, yes and no. Like it still kind of bothers me a bit. Not that doesn't really bother me fully, where but I'll do question it. I was like, yo, why would you laugh at? I think it's just, I think over time I grew to understand that it wasn't like malice. You know what I mean? It wasn't coming from a malice intention. So over time, and it was, you know, it's funny, as like I remember not wanting to see a therapist because I'm like, oh man, if I see a therapist, will they change my comedy?
Some people do worry about that, but it's like it actually just helps you find yourself more.
Yeah,
It's
which I
like,
didn't really, you know, in the present time, I didn't know. I had, it was like I was trying to protect or preserve where this funny was coming from. And if I found that it was, you know, like gonna be a threat, then I just didn't want to do it, right? Because you're just like, it's almost you're addicted to just getting that laugh.
How long were you doing it, like when you really started grinding with it around 23, 24 years old? About how long did it take for you to really start feeling like you got a hang of everything?
Oh, not until like maybe I was 31, 30. So like maybe 7, 8 years after I took it like fully seriously, where I was like, oh, okay. But then, even then I was like, didn't really know how to harness whatever energy I had. So I would say like now maybe it seems more like there's a purpose to each of these motions. So it took a long time, I would say.
I mean, it takes a while, and like, I mean, everyone's heard those stories of like, oh, it could take 10 years. Like, that's the thing. So during that time, when you're still trying to find it, it's an exciting time. You're
It was,
having fun, you're enjoying it. But does it feel like, oh, I'm not doing it yet? Or is it more of an afterthought once you do figure it out? You're like, oh, wow, I haven't been doing it this whole time.
yeah, that's actually, you know what? Because it's like you kind of, I mean, at the in the moment, you're like this trial and error journey stuff is frustrating. You know, let's, you know, cut me some slack. Let me get like, you know, and there's like multiple bouts of depression or whatever, but then I kind of look back at it now and I'm like, oh, I mean, it's good, it's what a story. Like all those things really, I mean, now it's like it's still hard, but like now, you know, with how social media or just the internet is so like big now that, you know, you could probably cut up your set and just avoid doing some of these treacherous rooms or whatever, or that you don't have to do anymore, because you could just upload and then, you know, you can probably you will cultivate an audience, and there's no right or wrong if you capitalize on what you can. But when I look back, I'm like, what did help me was going through all these like bad rooms was that there was not a situation I wasn't capable of understanding. Like you throw me into a certain situation, I go, if it's like chaotic, I go, I've felt this before. I completely understand that. I know where this is going because I've been through this. So I think for that, I mean, which doesn't really mean anything financially or like it's not gonna help you get on TV or anything, but learning those like tools, I don't regret that by any means. I don't, when I look back, there were a lot of funny stories and a lot of routes that I took where I was like, what the hell was I doing? You know? But I'm glad. I'm happy that it was like I got to do it in that era and search for find my voice. You know, it took longer than you sometimes want, but like at least I'm like, I got that out of everything. I'm like, oh, you know, I went through this trial and error to find my voice, and I can sleep at night knowing that that's how I do comedy the way I want to do comedy. I'm not sitting here being like, oh, fuck, I'm lying to myself, or this, I'm giving them a character. It's just like, oh, this is who I am.
That's great. And I bet having, like you were talking about, having been through the tough rooms or the tough moments, and you know how to get through that, that's such a crucial thing, because everyone's going to have moments like that, no matter how successful they are. They're going to have to fight through some stuff. But, you know, you think about when you get other opportunities, like if you're hosting some big award show or something, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's a tough room. If you've been through that for years and you've seen what it's like, then you can power through. But if you don't know how to handle those tough moments, then you can tremble in those big, big moments.
Yep. Exactly.
That could be good career moments. If you can power through, they're great moments.
You know, you said it, that's how it is. It's exactly that.
And I don't want to like crap on anyone, but I think in this last, just this year, I guess, we've seen a couple of stand-ups have, they bombed in a couple of settings that are bigger settings. And it's because comics before made it look so easy to do those moments, but those settings were always tough rooms. Those are always tough settings.
Yeah, they're very, it's like a corporate almost.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you can get through it, right. Yeah, if you've been there, then you know how to get through it, and you can look like you're getting through it, even though it's maybe a rough room.
Yeah, in those situations too, it's like, obviously it's not a comedy setting. It's like, you know, these actors and actresses, just these directors and whatever, they're just there for this event and this award show. And it's just like, you know, you really don't know what you're getting or how to do it. It's like a tough, tough job. It's like, you know, I look at it like it's a difficult. There's a lot of odds against you out the gate before you even touch the microphone.
Right.
So it's like,
It's own sort of art form to perform when things aren't going perfectly or smoothly.
Yeah.
And because I was just thinking, it was the other day, this a couple days ago, where I saw a couple people complaining about jokes that Jimmy Kimmel told at the Oscars. And they're like, apparently there are all these people online complaining. But if you watch the telecast, it doesn't look like things are going poorly, and it's because he knows how to power through.
Yeah.
So if he's making a joke about some actor and the actor doesn't seem so into it, he's still powering through and it seems like he's doing fine. It's like,
yeah, you know, I think with Jim, he has experience, you know what I'm saying,
all those hours each week that he's getting in telling jokes and having to be on in front of people. Like he's and it was his fourth time doing the Oscars, so he knows how to do those moments.
It's like you kind of like you that stuff bounces off of you, right? Like it's not going to be as emotionally maybe like hurtful in that moment.
Right. I also would imagine knowing how to stomach those tough rooms or those tough moments helps in auditioning for movies when you're about to, you know, you're auditioning for something with Daisy Ridley, for crying out loud. I mean, that would be nerve-wracking for a lot of people, but was it something you found a way to just like power through and do, or was it like, you know, I don't want to presume that it was a tough moment, but
no,
like, how did that go?
For that particular movie, they had the director and producer had seen me on Rami already. Okay. And then they had, you know, emailed myself and my agents and manager, and they were like, they had offered the role.
Oh, cool.
They were just like, hey, do you want to do this character? And Rachel Lambert, the director, had written me a letter in the email.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Offer only situation is pretty nice.
it was very wild. I didn't actually believe it at first. I was looking at the email like, what? Like it wasn't registering. I go, nah, there's no way. There's no way. You don't read it like four or five times. You're like, did they get the wrong person? Like this is like but even just auditioning over time, I'm not as used to it as the rejection as I would be in stand-up.
Yeah.
Like in stand-up, I used to that rejection. Like I've been up there for like 40 minutes. So, but with acting, that rejection, I'm still getting used to it with auditioning.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I guess because it's like a newer to me that like I have to learn, because with stand up, I learn like, you know, sometimes they're just not going to, they're not going to click, man.
Yeah.
It's not, no offense to you, no offense to them. It's just, it is what.
And it is the same with acting.
Yeah.
It really is like, no offense to you. It's not really a reflection on you.
Yeah, and it takes a while to get like to reframe my mind in that. Now I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, they're just, and it's casting at the end of the day. They're looking for something. Right.
Yeah, they have a particular thing in their mind.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't, you know, it's not like that situation you had with the movie where they're like, well, we saw him in this. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So they have to like go look for the needle in the haystack, usually is what they have to do. So, but they're still trying to find this specific thing that's in their brain that they can't really put a finger on until they see the audition. And I just told myself, I'm glad I did this. I'm glad I had the foresight to do this. I don't know why I was able to think this, but when I got into acting, I was like, you're going to hear no a lot more than you hear yes. And that's just the way it is. And so I was able to accept it.
Yeah.
But if you don't get that early, then it is real tough. It would be, I mean, because it's tough having gotten that, you know, having told myself that. It could, there are moments where you're like, well, great, I still need to make rent or whatever, you know. It's,
and emotionally too, I don't think I was as, you know, sometimes I suffer from like, you know, like, I'm sorry, low self-esteem or whatever other thing I'm suffering, you know, as a person. So then you know, trying to reframe that in general,
yeah,
then reframe it for like acting is just a whole feat in itself, right? Because it's not, it's not like it's just acting that gives me that feeling. It's just like everything else.
I get you. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I had to do that work too, or continue to do that
work. Yeah. I mean, it's the business is weird in that sense, because on the one hand, we do have to say like, oh, they're not laughing, it's just not clicking with them, and I can't take it personally, or, oh, they didn't bring me for a callback or cast me and I can't take it personally. But at the same time, comedy and acting is very much utilizing who you are as a person.
Yeah.
So they're right there next to each other. It's not like who I am as a person is how I'm going to present. And it's what I'm going to try to utilize specifically for comedy. So if someone doesn't like it, I can understand why someone would take it personally.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we can't, you know? I don't know what other thing is utilizing who we are at our core so much. Exactly. But yet it's the biggest situation where we have to say, don't take it personally. Like, it's not about you, even though everything you do is about you.
Exactly.
It's a weird, weird balance to find. Have you found a way to strike the right balance?
Not fully, not fully, man. But again, it's like ongoing.
Yeah, we're all
like work you got to do, right? But not fully. I'd be like, yeah, I wouldn't be on. It wouldn't be honest if I said fully. I still like, you know, even with stand up, it still bites at first. You're like, shit, man, why didn't they like me?
Yeah.
I guess the recovery time is a lot quicker than it used to be 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
Sure.
Right. That's the important thing now. It's like I can bounce out of this at least with a smile quicker and an understanding quicker.
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, a lot of people put down famous people for being so concerned about their looks or concerned about their public image. But like, if you get famous, it's not only are they, like we were saying, utilizing who they are as a person for their career. But if they get famous, they then have to even be kind of microscopic about everything.
Yeah.
And any little thing someone says or does will potentially affect their career. And 100%. There's so much talk about them that it's like, no wonder they are getting surgeries and trying to scrub the internet of things or getting real sensitive about anything said about them online. It's like, yeah, their whole life is built around their image. It's tough.
It's tough. And imagine like somebody being like, oh, your nose, a million people being like, your nose is weird.
Right.
Whatever it is. And then you're just like, what? Like, I mean, if someone told me that, like just walking down the street or something, like, hey, man, your nose is all weird. I'm like, that's going to sit with me for like, who knows? And that's one person.
Yeah.
They're like, what is it? What do you mean my nose? Oh, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's, so you can only imagine the more and more people are saying shit about you, it's hard. But I mean, again, it's like people, you really don't understand.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a tough thing. I heard someone told me when I was in college about how tough the Disney cruise auditions can be and how they can, someone can walk in and if the casting director is already like, their nose isn't right. So it's just, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Like there's okay. immediately like, okay, no. And it's brutal. And at the same time, I'm like, they are looking for a very specific thing and they have seen so many people and done so many auditions that they know it when they have it and they know when they don't have it. And yeah. just to get through the day, they do have to go that quickly. But that doesn't mean it's not harsh and hard no. for a person to experience.
Exactly. And it's like, then you're dealing with like young actor. I mean, just, yeah, your emotions aren't really fully developed, right?
Yeah.
Your self-esteem, you're still working on that.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty that the industry needs to do to be a little bit more mindful of talent's humanity and yeah. not only look at them as like the way they're looking at an object while they, you know, they do need to look at like, well, this person doesn't quite have the look that we need. It's like, okay, fine. Like I understand yeah. that you need to say that or that you need to recognize that and not cast this person because of it. But when you talk to them, can you talk to them like they're a person? Like, could you be nice about it?
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason, I guess, I wonder if it's one of the reasons people are like, they should pay people to audition.
Like, yeah, that would be, I mean, that would be helpful.
It's like you dragged them out here.
Yeah.
You humiliate them, at least give them some scratch.
Exactly.
So what is the career focus now? Is still focusing on stand up? Is what's the acting looking like as well?
I mean, I always wanted to end up acting on TV or film. That was like my goal from the start. So it was like I just found stand up a place where I could like in my head, I really didn't know much. I wasn't self-aware enough to go to acting school or anything like that. I just thought like if I develop my stand up voice, right? And then somebody sees me up there, then I can get roles.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same approach I'm taking. It's like I'd studied a little in college, but it's not like I am someone went to Tisch and or anything like that.
Yeah, it's like, and I have friends that did that, which is amazing, but it's like, yeah, that's the whole, so I'd like to like just further, just do way more TV and film and then obviously do stand up, but like that was my goal, was just try to end up in that area, that field, like end up acting.
Yeah. So with acting for you, do you feel like stand up, like the persona and then also finding who you are in stand up helps you act in projects, or are you using different muscles for the most part when you act?
I mean, there's obviously different muscles, but for stand up helps like in a sense, I mean, it just made me, able to access certain emotions.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Like able to like, to tap into things that might be a little bit vulnerable, cause that's what I've been practicing for like 19 years is like trying to talk about personal things in my life on stage. So it's like to go into a character or something like in these vulnerabilities, I don't feel as terrified. So that,
that's good. Yeah.
I mean, with the stand-up helps too, timing with stand-up helps like,
right.
Just learning, as you learn the beats, you learn how to do a punchline and, so when you're acting and you need to be comedic, you've already had some experience and like, but with stand up, as if it flops, it's like you're dealing with a consequence right there. Right.
Whereas at least in acting, you get another take.
Yeah. Take or no one ever sees it. It's just like cut it or the director or whoever tells you to do it differently. But yeah, it's something about being in that when you bomb that I can't explain to people like what it does to your whole body and your emotions. Like there's nothing, it's so helpless. You're like, okay.
Well, we've mentioned Rami and Sometimes I Think About Dying, but you've done other stuff. You got Mr. D, Humor Resources, and Bria Mack Gets a Life. And you also have something called Valara that you're in that's coming out. What in this period of getting a bunch of cool acting gigs, what have you learned about acting that you didn't pick up on from stand-up?
Well, I mean, I started doing like MTV Live in Toronto. I remember that was the first thing where I was like, whoa. I mean, it was MTV. It was running
Right,
shorts
yeah.
and bands. I was like, yo, this is so cool. And we would do sketches, which was, that taught me how to do a sketch. So I don't think I was doing sketches. And then there was a live taping. So then that was like learning not to be as nervous. And then Mr. D taught me, because Mr. D was the first time I ever acted in a sitcom. Jerry D is the star of the show, and it's based on his experiences. And I had opened for him in my hometown. And he's like, hey, do you want to audition for this new teacher? And I was like, oh, 100%. And then, he got me on that, taught me a lot, taught me about, I didn't know, coverage. It teaches you to, I didn't really, you have to, you do a bunch of takes, you gotta learn, you have to, I feel I had to learn to stay in that emotion. I mean, when to turn it off, Like, there's a lot of things I didn't know from stand-up that I learned, I took classes, obviously. I took classes when I started filming Rami. So maybe 4 years ago. So there's things I learned too. Also, I was used to projecting always with my hands, and then I learned how to use my face, and I learned how to use my
And your eyes, yeah. I mean,
eyes.
because like so much of camera, I mean, you can't be too expressive on. In on camera.
So that I learned that, like, I had to learn, not unlearn, but like I had to learn other tools, because in stand up I was just like, you're projecting in stand up. You have to, like, you're like, oh, to be a presence. So that, yeah, that's stuff I learned, which was, and I learned through all Mr. D, and it was like steps, right? It went all the way from MTV Live to the film, of learning and taking, learning from the other actors, and being around such talented, more experienced actors helped me out so much.
Yeah, I mean, and Daisy Ridley was also in a massive thing with Star Wars, right? I mean, she's a Jedi for crying out loud, and you were her love interest. So like she's obviously got a whole different kind of experience than maybe some of the people in other pieces, because she, I mean, being in such a big production, that's going to teach you a whole lot of things. So then when they come to do a like a more art house film, it's gonna be you're gonna learn a whole lot, because there's this person who's like, well, this is what we gotta focus on here. I learned to cut the fat in a
Oh
big
yeah,
piece.
it was, that's another wild thing too, just learning as much as I could from her in scenes. That was like, yeah, that was awesome. I
Yeah,
was
was
like,
it
oh.
picking up on things that she was doing, or were you having conversations?
Both, I think, both, and being, but just doing the scenes, I think I just got better after. I got better picking up and just going through, like, multiple takes and just acting, you know what I mean? I could learn and see, and she was very giving.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to
So,
hear.
it was very kind, very funny. So it wasn't like, she felt very like, there was like, it felt, there was such comfort and safety you felt.
That's,
So I feel like, I felt that, and it helps. Then you could just kind of like, test out and work out your stuff and try and attempt. So yeah, it was
Yeah,
very
I mean,
helpful.
like getting vulnerable like that. I mean, it's a different kind of vulnerable on a TV or film set than it is on a stand-up stage. But I mean, getting vulnerable is getting vulnerable. And I guess also, like with the type of material that you do, helped you in acting as well, because a lot of actors, I mean, a lot of stand-ups, they're not being vulnerable. They're not trying to talk about real stuff. They're just trying to like make jokes. And so if you are doing those that kind of material, it's allowing you to get to a deep, real place. When you go to do a drama, then
100%.
yeah, it's like you were saying earlier, just more comfortable with that.
Yeah, and I took, I mean, with the stand up, and then again, I took for the film, I took an acting, like, class. Like, I was getting coaching. Sorry, I was getting coaching online, like through Zoom. And then I was, and my other actor friends who are more experienced were giving me a lot of notes, and what, how to break script down, and what they would do, and what benefit helps them. So I was like picking people's brains throughout the whole process.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I mean,
So I was
there's a
like,
lot of learning on the job that happens. Even like, I mean, just like no matter who people are, no matter what sort of role they're in, no matter how big the role is, they're still learning. That's like one of the cool things.
I took like two, that was 2 months, like basically a prep doing that. And then even the rest of the cast, man, the whole cast was just super amazing and on point with their skill set. And it never felt like, it felt like a family, to be honest with you, which entail helped me be comfortable as a performer. Again, the whole safe thing and like just having this community that was supportive. These actors, they were supportive that you felt like, you know, like it made my performance, I feel better because I was just like playing.
Yeah.
Working and like, you know, it was just like almost like we were there having just such this cool journey and rid of ego. It didn't feel really like anyone had any ego. It was just there for this project. And I think everyone was like moved and captivated by the script and enjoyed it, that they wanted to bring the best they could do. So I felt like everyone wanted to tell this story.
Oh, that's great. I don't know how we got to the end of the episode, but here we are. It's been great catching up and hearing about your experiences. But let's create something together. And maybe the thing we could talk about is how someone can get over that hump of not talking about real stuff in their material and actually get to the real stuff. There are obviously no cheat codes in stand-up, but are there any things that you learned that you can mention that maybe will help someone get along faster?
Well, again, being so like, you know, enamored and loving Richard Pryor, and he was so vulnerable and said whatever. I was like, well, how do I want to do that. I just wanted to do that. I just didn't know. So I remember being in Toronto, grinding it out, or just like doing sets every night. I was like, what if like each set, each night I did something and worked on something. So like one night I'll riff with the crowd, or another night I'll just like ramble about ideas and not care if it's like not working until I got to what I got. And then what was another night if I could just learn how to dig deep and expose myself.
Oh,
and I remember there was one time I went up, I was like, I'm just gonna tell the audience that I don't really last long in bed. And seeing how vulnerable maybe that is. And there was no joke. I just said, hey, I go fast. That's all I do. You
and
know,
then you just kind of sat with the response from it and the feeling that you felt.
So I would try to do more things like that. And I think that for sure that helped me because I was like, oh, it's not that scary, I guess, by the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that you realize once you've done it, you're like, oh, I actually can do it. And also, I didn't die from doing it.
No, and what are you going to say that it's like that scene in 8 Mile where you, like, what are you going to say that I won't say about myself?
Yeah.
So none of your shit's going to hurt me because I'm already saying.
Well, that was how I dodged bullying in grade school. It's like, I'm going to just make fun of myself first.
Yeah.
Then they can't make fun of me.
Yes.
And if they do, it's like, well, I got a better joke than that.
Exactly.
That's all you got. I got a better joke about me than that.
Yeah, you get it.
Well, awesome. There it is. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, man, thank you, man. It was great catching up. Great seeing you again. What a fun time. I think the time also, like, you know, it flew because it just was like, you're so well prepared. You're felt invested. Sometimes you do these things and they just don't, you know, they you know what I'm talking about? There's, I was like, I don't think they're here. I'm like, so much respect, man. It was great. I just want to say.
Very much appreciated those kind words. I hope you appreciated the conversation we had. You can see Dave in Sometimes I Think About Dying, available to rent on Prime and Apple TV. You can also check out his special Miseducation of a Fuckboy on YouTube. Follow him on Linktree, Instagram, and Twitter at Dave Merhej. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at There It Is Pod, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at There It Is. Follow me on Twitter at Jason Farr Jokes and Instagram at Jason Farr Picks. Go to thereitispod.com for newsletter and support info. Links in bio. Until next time, be good to each other.
The music for the theme song was created by Neil Brooks. The rap was written and performed by Nick Acevedo. The logo for There It Is was created by Jeff Prater. The There It Is podcast is produced by Jason Farr.